You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. And because it is Monday, and because he has to be here for his job anyway, it's time for Mondays with
Mitch. It's a very nice intro that you have, Brian. You've really perfected it. You even say it in a particular way now. Truly branded.
I've incorporated the dramatic pause.
People now know where I am on Monday.
We should build in a musical theme.
Okay. Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm okay. Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
I spend the weekend blissfully doing things that do not involve reading the news. What fresh hell has happened in Washington?
Wow. Well, you know, not a lot's happening in Washington because Congress is at recess, so there's no congressional actions, except in one part, and that is the Senate Judiciary Committee has begun holding additional hearings for Trump's judicial nominees to join the bench, so the federal courts, before the end of the year is up, so they can be confirmed before the end of the year.
How can a committee meet while the Senate is recessed? Yeah.
So the committee can still meet, and it can meet anywhere it wants, and it actually has traveled around with only a few members that have participated in. But you will remember, Brian, if it wasn't last week, it was the week before. I don't remember what I did on Thursday or Friday, never mind last week, but I know it wasn't that long ago where we talked about the Democrats in the Senate struck a deal with Republicans to allow 15 more judicial nominations to go through in order for them to be able to have this recess before the midterm election. So that happened. Those 15 judges went through. Democrats said, well, this is going to, you know, Chuck Schumer and all of them said they were going to be confirmed regardless by the end of the year, but this allows us to get home and campaign. Well, after that occurred, there are now 50 additional judges that Senate Republicans are going to continue to try to move through before the end of this congressional session, which is pretty remarkable. 50 additional beyond the 15 that we were talking about recently. And again, this is in context of sort of reshaping the way that the federal court looks. Senate Democrats, so a couple of hearings will happen this week for two Trump appointees to join the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. These are two people that neither Kamala Harris or Dianne Feinstein backed. That's a change since you got rid of the filibuster. It used to be that a president would at least confer and try to get the approval of the senators from that state. But since you don't have a filibuster or a threat of a filibuster anymore, at least needing 60 votes to be able to break a filibuster, that is now completely off the table. So they're having a couple of important hearings happening this week. Last week, hearings were also happening, confirmation hearings for these judges. Senate Democrats boycotted the hearings. They didn't even show up, but it probably won't stop them being confirmed. So we're talking potentially an extra 50 judges to be confirmed to the federal bench. And that's significant because Donald Trump had already had more of his nominees confirmed to the federal courts than any other president in the first 2 years in history. Add an additional 50, it's remarkable. So Obama, his first 2 years in office, you know, remember he had Democratic control in Congress and in the Senate. He had 60 judges approved. If Donald Trump gets these additional 50, it'll be 140 judges that will have been approved in Donald Trump's first 2 years.
The main difference being the filibuster still applied to judicial nominees during the first 2 years of Obama's
presidency. They did. But then the Senate Democrats got control again after the 2012 election of the Senate. But Republicans were filibustering Obama's nominations to the court. And then that's when Harry Reid, Senate Democratic leader, took away the filibuster for lower court judicial nominees. He kept in place the Supreme Court, the ability to filibuster a Supreme Court nominee. And of course, Mitch McConnell changed that last year with Neil Gorsuch, more than a year ago, I guess.
Wow. That is a quiet but highly effective lock on power the Republicans are building there.
Okay. Pretty remarkable, and it also shows how important, you know, these midterm elections are. And how difficult, you know, because very likely, even if the Democrats win the House of Representatives, if they don't win the Senate, you know, that's much tougher to do. You're still going to have a dynamic where Donald Trump is going to have almost a clear path towards getting his nominees confirmed
right.
by a simple majority.
And Democratic odds of taking the Senate are looking increasingly slim going by the state-by-state polls. Now, it's possible that there's some kind of systemic uptick in Democratic turnout that is not captured by the pollsters and not completely canceled out by vote suppression tactics in the states where there are close races that would swing every race that's close. But boy, right now, all the polling aggregation sites are putting the odds pretty low. On that depressing note,
that's right.
Let's talk about what House Republicans are talking about, even though they're not in session. Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, Senate Republicans as well, and Democrats. It's interesting, and you're obviously talking about the aftermath and the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the Saudi Arabian embassy in Turkey. While Donald Trump is sort of all over the place in what he says, he told the Washington Post over the weekend in a phone interview that he thought Saudi Arabia was deceiving in its information about the killing of Khashoggi. Previous to that, he said that he believed Saudi Arabia's claim that it was a rogue operation that ended up killing Khashoggi in the embassy. This also comes after, and we'll get to Congress here in a moment, but I do think it's important to note that as this story about Khashoggi has dominated the news now for the past 3 weeks, I mean, this is a long time in the Trump era for a single story to dominate the way that it is.
I can't think of any story that stayed alive that long.
Well, you know, I think the caravan, which is now back, probably was around that long back in the spring.
Because Trump kept it in the news.
Yeah, and they're going to keep this one in the news too. But that said, right there, I mean, it's pretty remarkable how much attention and sustained attention, but that's, you know, it might be happens when you kill a journalist from the Washington Post. You know, Donald Trump, you know, pretty shocking late last week in Montana praised, Republican Representative Gianfort, for body slamming, the reporter during, last spring as well to praise an attack against a reporter while this story of Khashoggi is dominating the news is really remarkable. And you have to ask yourself, is Donald Trump, does he know what he's doing? Is he saying this purposefully? Is he sending out signals? Is he just that guy? And we all know people like this that just, they can't help it. They're going to say the wrong thing that you're not supposed to say. Who knows? But that's all pretty remarkable. What I also find remarkable is what we're hearing from Congress, which so far seems to be pretty bipartisan in their condemnation of Saudi Arabia over the killing. And even calling Ben Sasse, a Republican from Nebraska, has said Congress should consider stopping the sale of arms to Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia buys so much military gear from the United States. It's part of that relationship, along with oil. Richard Durbin, who is calling for the U.S. Ambassador, even though we don't really have an ambassador in there right now. But anyways, diplomatic personnel in Saudi Arabia to be pulled out. So you're hearing a lot of bipartisan calls about all of this. The thing is, as we mentioned, beyond the Senate Judiciary Committee, Congress is not in session.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can Congress act even if the president is unwilling to? Sure, because they can override a veto, which I've heard some lawmakers suggest that they would have the two-thirds majority needed to override a presidential veto if it meant bringing sanctions against Saudi Arabia or something like that. But I don't know. I think a lot won't be surprising. Congress's bark is oftentimes much worse than its bite, and it would not surprise me that by the time there'll be other major stories that have taken over the cycle, and this will be soon on the back, I imagine, on the back burner by the time Congress does get back into session, which will be after an election and everything.
Yeah, this would probably be a good point to mention that we will be going into depth on the geopolitics of the U.S.-Saudi relationship in the 8 o'clock hour with Dr. Imad Harb of the Arab Center in Washington, D.C. But it does look like the story is at least going to stay in the news a while longer. Turkey is going to release at least some amount of the conclusions from its own investigation into what happened inside the Saudi consulate tomorrow. That's going to spend at least a couple days working through the news cycle. we don't really know what Saudi Arabia is going to do next. Every time they revise their story about what happened, it creates like a whole new news frenzy. And even Donald Trump, I mean, it's hard to pin him down to a consistent position. One day he'll be making excuses for Mohammed bin Salman. The next day he'll be, you know, saying this is very serious. We got to do something about this.
Yeah. And the investigations are interesting. The Washington Post, in an editorial over the weekend, Jamal Khashoggi wrote for the Washington Post, called on congressional investigations into the killings. So whether that happens or not, we don't know. Again, Congress is on recess, so this is all happening. Maybe something would have happened pretty quickly if Congress wasn't on recess, but it is on recess. The intelligence committees reportedly have asked our own, the U.S. own intelligence agencies for intercepted communications between Saudi Arabia to see if there's anything, any information they can get about the killing through that. Bob Corker, who chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, is also asking Turkey to be provided all the video and audio that it has over his killing. So that would be something that could continue this story, sustain the story in the news if there are congressional investigations. I think Donald Trump is probably surprised it's still in the news as mm-hmm. long as it has. I think he was thinking this would just, you know, disappear. We're not going, you know, as he's already said, we're not going to risk the weapon sales that we're already doing, the business that we're already doing over one person. And I think he was kind of coming from a real politique kind of way of looking at it. You know, Saudi Arabia killing somebody, executing somebody is not unusual. Mm-hmm. It's unusual to do it in its embassy in Turkey. That is. I don't mean to downplay the significance of that. But, you know, Saudi Arabia has a horrific human rights record.
But, you know, it's the story of one person with lurid details almost always has more valence in the public sphere than, you know, the killing of tens of thousands of people. And I believe Stalin had a quote about that.
Yeah.
One person, it's a murder. Kill a million, it's a statistic. I mean, I may be misattributing it. I'm probably misparaphrasing it. But someone said something like that. But also, it's like, it's a story that seems like it's made for Hollywood. The guy gets lured into an embassy. 15 Saudi intelligence agents fly in a chartered jet like hours before he get there. Now there's closed circuit TV coverage, footage of them pulling up. One of them is an expert in forensic autopsies who brought a bone saw with him. They allegedly dismember the guy. And the latest news this morning is that they had someone walking around with a wig, wearing matching clothes that masked Jamal Khashoggi.
Wearing a beard. Mm-hmm.
Apparently, to impersonate him in front of cameras so as to create the impression that he had actually left the embassy.
And he was wearing his clothes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw that video this morning. I didn't find it that convincing. He was wearing his clothes, and you do see him go to some off place area and to a public restroom, and he changes clothes back into his regular clothes. So it does give that suggestion of that's what's going on. When you meant the reason that wig, I said beard, is because it wasn't that convincing to me, because the guy actually has a full head of hair where Khashoggi did not. Mm-hmm. And it was very clear on the videotape who was who by it. So I thought that was really sloppily done.
But every element of this is just so bizarre. I mean, I think that explains some of the valence in the media, even beyond
it is. But the elite status of Khashoggi. But you also, with the allegation that Russia killed its own former ex-intelligence folks in Europe, you know, that got a lot of attention too, and that got that became a big deal too. And there were sort of, you know, sanctions that were passed, not major ones, but yeah.
But also, I mean, remember the tactics Russia allegedly used, the Novichok nerve agent, or if you go back further, the radioactive isotope polonium-210. These were assassination methods that also exposed other people in the UK who had nothing to do with Russia to mortal risk.
Mm-hmm.
This would probably be a good point to remind our listeners that today, for
good
all
morning,
those
by
of
the
you
way.
Who live in California, is the last day to register to vote online. It is the last day to ask for a vote by mail ballot. The place to register to vote online is registertovote.ca.gov. That's registertovote, all one word, .ca, like California, .gov. But if you happen to miss today's deadline, it is still possible to register to vote up to and including on Election Day. They give you a form called a conditional voter registration. They give you a conditional ballot. And once they have verified your paperwork, they do count the ballot. And although in a lot of our coverage, provisional ballots and conditional ballots get bad raps because some states have very low rates of actually processing them, California's is quite high. By law, the state is required to go over and validate every ballot, even if it doesn't have a statistical chance of changing the outcome of an election. So the easiest way to make sure your paperwork is in order, if you're not already registered or if you're not sure if you're registered, go online today. Today is the deadline. Registertovote.ca.gov.
Brian, can we talk about the story in the New York Times?
Which story in the New York
Times? Which one? Well, concerning the Trump administration moving to try to restrict federal civil rights protections for transgendered people. Pretty important stuff there.
Yeah. So this is leaked drafts of a rule coming out of the Trump administration.
That's right.
What would the rule do?
So what the rule would do is it would redefine what gender is under Title IX. Title IX, the 1972 amendment to the Higher Education Act, that is a civil rights act really in of itself, that said that federal government or any entity that receives any money or administered by the federal government cannot discriminate based on sex and gender. And the Obama administration actually broadened what sex could be, leaving it to the ability to be able to choose gender. And what the Trump administration is now doing out of the Department of Health and Human Services is they are coming up with rule proposals that would change the definition of gender to gender will be determined by the genitalia at birth and it is immutable. In other words, it cannot change. The genitalia that you are born with, that is how the federal government for here on out, unless the rules changed again, if it does get changed in the first place, that's how the government will see you. And that's significant because what Obama did under Title IX is he then, in his administration, was able to extend protections against discrimination for transgendered folks in education, in housing, in healthcare. Again, anything that the federal government is involved in, it was not allowed to discriminate based on against transgendered folks based on that identity. And so what they're proposing again is to change that, which would basically take away standing for transgendered folks to be able to go to a court to say they were discriminated against, which would be pretty significant. It is a proposed rule change. It hasn't come out yet, but it is expected to come out this fall. Once it does come out, then there will be a 60-day public comment period before it would become rule, before it would become law. And this particularly is going to affect the many aspects of government, including the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Education, the Department of Justice. Significant, again, just having the legal standing to be able to bring your case to a court. This would undo that. And then the Department of Labor as well concerning discrimination in the workforce.
But how long lasting is it? I mean, is this something the next president can reverse with the stroke of a pen?
Yes. And that's what it'll be. Well, not quite with the stroke of a pen, but basically.
They have to go through the rulemaking.
They have to go through the whole process again, which Trump administration is doing right now. So yes, absolutely. It's not like an act from Congress or something.
And is it possible that the rule change itself could be litigated as taking away rights that had already been vested in transgender or even, you know, intersex people? Not everybody is born with genitalia that are definitively of one sex or another.
Yeah, and I looked into that latter point. The former point, I imagine there'll be lawsuits against it. The question is, what will they claim it to? What will they attach it to? Meaning, like, how are they being violated according to what law? Mm-hmm. Before, you could say, well, because of Title IX, right? And so now with the Trump administration is trying to say, no, you don't have Title IX protection. So we'll see how that, I don't know how that ends up working out in the courts. That'd be good to talk to a lawyer about that. But as your second point, they would do DNA testing. If there was,
there's people born with an extra chromosome.
Yeah, I'm not trying to defend it.
Why now? Is this something that's just been like on the back burner moving along in the Trump administration? We just got the first whiff of it now? Or is the Trump administration intentionally leaking this out to try to gin up the evangelical base right before an election?
I'm just guessing here. Uh-huh. I think it's the latter. I think it's political. The New York Times did not write, at least in its original story, of why they were given these memos that were internal memos in the Department of Health and Human Services. But I suspect that's it. I suspect that, along with the caravan now that's in Mexico heading north, will also be something else that the Trump administration will plan on using here on out.
It's a caravan of asylum seekers who started in Honduras.
Yep. So, you know, these are the things. I think so. I mean, that's how I would guess, but I don't have definitive proof of that's what happened.
All right. Mitch Jezrich, we'll have to leave it there because we're almost out of time. Always good to see you.
Thank you, sir.